Good morning. This is Animals Today. I'm Dr. Lori Kirschner. We have a good show for you today. But first, listen to this. This is pretty interesting. I read this. According to Roger Tabor, a United States survey of 10,000 households with pets conducted by Barry Sinrod found that 60% of owners shared their beds with their pets. Now, I'd have to guess that this is probably an underestimation because I think that there's a small crowd out there, especially you men, who just won't confess up that you sleep with your pet. But I'll tell you that my husband, Peter, and I are amongst those individuals that do snooze on the same bed with our pets. And I'll also say it's often a challenge, or rather a sacrifice, especially if you have more than one pet who wants to cuddle up next to you. I mean, just like humans, pets steal the covers, they're bed hogs, they're pillow hogs, they snore. And some of us who sleep with our pets are reluctant to even move or shift into a more comfortable position once our pet has already settled in around us or on top of us. I mean, am I right about this? One of my cats, Margarita, literally traps me in bed when she plops herself on top of the covers between my legs, okay? And then my other cat, Uzo, will oftentimes settle on my back. So I wake up in the middle of the night, and I'm trapped. And God forbid I unconsciously turn over on my side or whatever. I get yelled at by them because I disrupted their comfy positions. They're going to jump down off the bed, and now I'm left feeling sort of guilty that I had the nerve to disrupt their sleep. Or how about this? Have you ever woke up in the middle of the night experiencing numbness in a limb because your dog or cat is cutting off your circulation? A lot of us are okay with that. We're okay with going painfully numb in a limb as long as our darling animals get their Z's. I mean, this is craziness. Have you ever needed to shift your body to a more comfortable position and with great effort so as not to disturb the animals, you move one muscle fiber at a time and you move ever so gently and in positions you never thought your body could make to maneuver around your pet like a little contortionist? And often your pet detects this movement and they'll open one of their little darling eyes and pierce at you saying, "What do you think you are doing?" I'm telling you, we have allowed these animals to control our lives. But I'm getting off point here. Here's my point. It is therefore no surprise to learn that there may be a link between sleeping problems and sleep deprivation and pets. According to results published in 2002 of a survey of 300 sleep disorder patients, this was conducted by Dr. John Shepherd, medical director of the Mayo Clinic Sleep Disorders Center, 22% of the patients were likely to have pets sleeping on the bed with them. 53% of pet owners considered their sleep to be disrupted to some extent every night. Snoring was reported in 21% of dogs and 7% of cats. And cats were more likely to be allowed in the bedroom and on the bed. So why do we sleep with them if they're so disruptive to our sleep? Well, it's probably because we've all gone mad. No, really, listen. It's so obvious. A lot of us, the majority of pet owners, view their pets as part of the family and enjoy the closeness and the companionship and sense of security. In fact, I know many people would say they need this closeness in order for them to get to sleep. And you know what? There are many things that can disturb our sleep. Illness, medication, a human being next to you. Get this. There are a few surveys that I came across that really indicated a large percentage of individuals stated they enjoyed a better night's sleep in their bed with their pet than with a human companion. And how about our minds keeping us up at night? I mean, we worry about the stresses of daily life. That sure can keep us up, right? Is the economy going to pick up soon? Is my job secure? Is my family healthy? Are my animals healthy? Should we move to Australia? Our pets are just one of the many things that can intrude upon our ability to sleep well. But I'll tell you the difference is with all these causes of sleep disturbance is that our pets are the only factor that gives us something positive and pleasurable in return. So it's a give and take, right? You give up a little but gain a lot from sharing your bed with your furry family members. And I'll tell you, a lot of pet hair to clean off the covers, that's for sure. I just blame all that hair on my husband, although it's hard to blame when you have a mixture of colors of hair there on the bed sheets. Anyway, we have a great show for you today. What are we doing today? We are, we're going to talk about Catalina Island. Have you ever been there? Catalina Island is a little rocky island just off the coast of Southern California. It's 22 miles southwest of Los Angeles. The island's small, 22 miles long, 8 miles across at its greatest width. Catalina falls under the jurisdiction of Los Angeles County, and most of the island is owned by the Catalina Island Conservancy. Actually, the Conservancy oversees about 99% of Catalina Island. So how do you get to Catalina Island? Well, you get to Catalina from five main land ports in Southern California. You get there by sea or by air. And the ride is about an hour by boat or 15 minutes by helicopter. And what do people do on this beautiful little island? Well, you stroll around Avalon. Avalon is the main town there, Catalina. Avalon is only 1 square mile in size, and everything is within easy walking distance. And you can hang out and relax on the beaches. There's various water activities. There's hiking, biking. There's even a little golf course. And when Peter and I were there this last time, we took a Jeep land tour, which took us into the interior of the island, guided by a naturalist who taught us all about the natural history of the island and the ecology, including the endemic plant and animal species in the region. Anyway, it was so educational and interesting, we thought we needed to bring it on Animals Today. And so here with us to share this information is Leslie Baer. She's with the Catalina Island Conservancy. Welcome, Leslie.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, Lori.
Thanks for joining us on Animals Today. Leslie, what is the Catalina Island Conservancy and what is its primary mission?
Well, the Catalina Island Conservancy is one of the largest land trusts in Southern California, and we have a very unique mission. Most land trusts really are there just to protect the land. We have a little bit of a complicated mission, and we balance conservation, education, and recreation. So a big part of our mission is also to provide access for diverse audiences to come and enjoy Catalina's wildlands, which are like a slice of old California. It's like going back in time to the way things used to be.
Leslie, when was the Conservancy formed, and why was it originally formed?
Well, it was formed in 1972, and there's a lot of stories about why it was formed. The one that I think is most interesting is told by a gentleman who owns Catalina Express, who used to know Philip K. Wrigley. And the Wrigleys owned the island at the time. And this gentleman also knew John Wayne. And the story goes that John Wayne approached him and said, asked him to broker a meeting with Mr. Wrigley because Mr. Wayne wanted to buy one of the coves. And that meeting never took place because when this gentleman, Doug Bombard, told Mr. Wrigley, the story goes that Mr. Wrigley thought, oh my gosh, if I don't protect this island, one day it will all have privately owned coves and look like Newport Beach. So in 1972, the Wrigley and Offield families who owned the island created the Catalina Island Conservancy and deeded 88% of the island to make it a nature preserve so that that today and future generations would always be able to enjoy that beautiful slice of old California.
Now, you say Wrigley. This is Wrigley Gum Wrigley?
That's right.
And the Wrigley who owned the Chicago Cubs Wrigley?
Exactly.
As a
matter of fact, the Cubs used to practice on the island.
Oh, really?
When people come and visit, they can see the old ball field that they used to practice on.
Oh, that's cool. I don't think I saw that.
Yeah.
That's great. So my husband and I recently visited and took one of the Jeep Echo tours of the island, and hopefully we'll talk about that later, but we were really impressed with how much the Conservancy is genuinely interested in conservation.
Yes. I mean, it's a very big mission. It's 42,000 acres are under our care, and it's quite a large job to try to protect and restore the island, because unfortunately it suffered a lot of environmental damage just like the rest of California, but it's been under management now with the Conservancy for 35 plus years, And we've been restoring it and protecting it and trying to find that balance between the needs of human use and the needs of the land to regenerate.
If you're just tuning into the show, I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. You're listening to Animals Today on News Talk 920 KPSI. We're speaking with Leslie Baer with the Catalina Island Conservancy. Leslie, tell us a little bit about the island. Where is it? What's its climate like?
Well, it's just off the coast of California, and you might have heard of the song 26 Miles Across the Sea, which is wrong. It's only really about 22 miles across the sea, but Santa Catalina is waiting for me. And it's one of the Channel Islands. It is one of the southern Channel Islands, and the island is most largely visited by tourists much more greatly than the other Channel Islands. And so it's where you can really have easy access to kind of understand the specialness of the islands off the coast. There's a number of native and endemic animals that are found on Catalina, the endemics, and nowhere else in the world, which a lot of people don't realize. It was an uplifted island, which was never a part of the mainland. And so everything that's on the island, it had to put out a lot of effort to get there, and we call it wind, wing, or wave, brought all of the animals that are there. And then over the centuries, they evolved into particular subspecies. So, for example, we have the Catalina Island fox is found only on Catalina and nowhere else on the world.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the animals now, since this is an animal show.
Okay, the animals I thought you might want to.
Right, the animals on Catalina, now that you mention animals, they're the ones both native and unique to the island. I guess you'd refer those to as endemic. And then the ones introduced to the island you mentioned, such as, I guess, like the bison, huh?
That's right.
So why don't you first, since you started mentioning about the Catalina Island fox, tell us a little bit about the fox.
Well, the Catalina Island fox is a very, very interesting little animal. There are 8 Channel Islands, and 6 of them have foxes, which are endemic, meaning that subspecies is only found on that island. So that's Catalina Island, San Clemente, Santa Cruz, San Nicolas, San Miguel, and Santa Rosa all have foxes on them. And each little fox population has its own problems and challenges. On our island, in 1999, there was an outbreak of distemper. And we had about 1,300 foxes on the island, and the population plummeted to just about 100 animals. So we almost lost the species. And the Conservancy put into action a fox recovery plan, and that plan, stage A, was to capture and vaccinate all the remaining healthy animals, and then a captive breeding program was instated where breeding pairs were put in a special structure and monitored, and then they would release the babies every year. And then in 2004, the program was such a success that we were able to shut down the captive breeding facility, and now we're at a monitoring phase, and we've got more than 800 animals, we're very excited to say, on the island today, and the monitoring continues, but the species is still classified as an endangered species because it hasn't yet proven that the population can maintain itself on the island. So that's where we are today.
Yeah, so they got canine distemper. That's the distemper.
That's
and
right.
How did they get that?
You know, Lori, that is really under debate. There are a number of theories. I mean, the most obvious would be that a dog brought it to the island, but that's not absolutely been proven. It's also possible that distemper existed in some kind of a form on the island, and because of some other environmental reason, the foxes became more susceptible or had weakened immune systems. So it's never, you know, that number one diseased animal was never identified and said, hey, this was the source. It's likely that it came from a canine, but we'll probably never be absolutely sure.
I understand. Listen, stay with us. We're going to continue our discussion with Leslie Baer, learning all about the plants and animal species on Catalina Island. This is Animals Today on News Talk 920 KPSI. Welcome back to Animals Today. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. We're Back with Leslie Baer talking about the ecology of Catalina Island. Interesting stuff here. It's a wonderful place to visit, too. If you've never been there, you got to see it. Very close to us here in Palm Springs, California. It's this rocky little island just off the coast of Southern California, and the Catalina Island Conservancy oversees the majority of the island, and that's what we're talking about here, their role in overseeing the island. And the entire island is quite small, actually, 22 miles long and 8 miles across at its greatest width. And Avalon is the name of the town on Catalina Island, which is only 1 square mile in size. So you walk the entire town pretty easily and see all the cute shops and eat at the casual restaurants. But lots of fun activities to do there. There's beaches to relax on, water activities. There's hiking, biking, and Peter and I found that the most fun and interesting thing was taking this Jeep tour that they offer, and it was led by a naturalist, and he took us to the interior of the island and taught us all about the ecology, including the plants and animal species in the region. And that's what we're talking about with Leslie Baer here, which has been quite interesting. So Leslie, let's move on. Actually, before I get to marine life, I believe I read there's a history of pigs and sheep on the island. Is that correct? And what happened to them?
Yeah, there is, actually. The pigs, actually, among the non-native or introduced animals, have been, over the years, cattle, sheep, goats, pigs. And we talked a little bit about the mule deer and the black buck deer.
Right.
And, you know, in the 1820s, there was mining going on Catalina, and there were also smugglers that were based on the island. And there are a lot of different stories about where the goats and pigs may have come from, but some people believe that they were brought onto the island at that point as a food source.
As a food source?
Yeah.
Okay.
As a food source. And the cattle and sheep ranching were introduced in the 1840s.
Yeah.
So the island also has a history of non-native animals that had, you know, a lot of consequences for a small island, because as we talked about with the deer, when there is no predator, unfortunately, I mean, these animals grow out of control. And at the height of the goat and pig population in the early 1990s, there were about 20,000 goats and pigs literally eating the island into oblivion.
Mm. Yeah, well, that goes back to the other lesson you mentioned, just to not bring animals that are not endemic to an island.
Yeah, it's probably not a good idea.
Right. Let's move on to domestic animals, Leslie. Mm-hmm. Cats and dogs. First of all, is there an animal facility or shelter or humane society on the island?
There's both. There's a wonderful little animal hospital called the Catalina, our Animal Hospital of Catalina Island. And as a matter of fact, the Conservancy had a big role in raising funds for that and working with the local veterinarian and the local community and the Humane Society. We all raised money to just have that facility built very recently. The new facility is not even open yet, and the vet has been working out of a little 400-square-foot facility for quite a long time. There's also the Catalina Island Humane Society, which is on the island, and we've got more than 1,000 dogs and cats on the island.
Mm.
That are lovingly cared for by Dr. Richard and his wife, Annie Denny. Just fantastic vets. I mean, you know, vets. He makes house calls still. So he'll come right to your house to care for your animal.
Yeah, you don't get that anymore, do you? That's
no,
wonderful.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
I actually take my animals, my animals still live on the mainland because I don't have room where I live for them. And so I actually bring them to the island for their vet checks.
Oh, that's great. Is feral cats a problem there like it is everywhere else in the United States?
You know, feral cats are a whole other issue. I didn't even include them in that domestic pet number. We have about 1,000 feral cats on the island, believe it or not. And very, very sadly, about 50% of those feral cats are infected with AIDS and leukemia.
Oh.
Because the population density is so high in comparison to how they usually are able to kind of spread out. So we do have a very large colony, or there are many colonies. Most of the feral cats are in the city of Avalon, which is not under the jurisdiction of the Conservancy. And right now the Humane Society tries to take care of those colonies. They have people assigned to feed them. And then our wonderful vet, in collaboration with some funding from the Conservancy and the city and the Humane Society, participates in a spay, neuter, and release program, which hasn't quite stabilized the population because people keep turning new cats loose into the population.
Right, and they keep having babies.
They do, but we're really hoping that we can get that under control because I'll tell you, Catalina Island is no environment for cats to be living in. They just weren't meant to walk among cactus, and not good things happen to them when they make their way into the interior.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get that program under control in the cat population there.
It would be. And also, I mean, we really need to do more. And the Conservancy this coming year is going to be undertaking a education program that really tries to help people understand that they can't just turn their animals loose. For some reason, people think, gosh, you know, animals belong out in nature. If I turn my cat loose in the interior, I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah.
And it's about the cruelest thing you can do to a cat, to turn it loose in a desert.
we know here in Palm Springs, we know that, how many predators out there. And it's, and like you mentioned, the cacti, it's just it's incredibly cruel.
Yep.
So let's touch upon just very briefly of the marine life around the island. There are these old pictures of flying fish that I see. Are they still around?
We still do have flying fish, although I'm told that the numbers are diminished. As you know, fisheries around the world are diminished right now.
Yeah.
And it's one of the big challenges, global challenges, as we continue to try to, you know, feed our world and keep our oceans clean. Luckily, we still have a lot of marine life around the island, including seals and sea lions, tremendous variety of amazing fish. I mean, the first thing you see when you get off the boats in Catalina are the bright orange Garibaldi, which is the state fish, staking out their little territory. It's usually the males guarding their nests, stationed at about, 5 feet apart. And then in the old days, we had sea otter, but the sea otter is another animal that's gone the way of not being found on Catalina. They were basically hunted to extinction beginning in the early 1800s. So one day we hope that we'll be able to bring the sea otter back.
Yeah. And, you know, Leslie, in the crossing from the mainland to Catalina Island, we always see dolphin.
Dolphins. Yes, we have dolphins.
Yeah.
We have a number of different species of whales that you can see. Or if you take the helicopter, you can often see pilot whales. We see gray whales and once in a while a blue whale.
Mm. Leslie, let's move on to the plants on the island. Now, the Wrigley Memorial Botanical Garden, how did that come about, and what will visitors see if they visit that?
Well, that started out being the private garden of Mrs. Wrigley way, way back in the day. And Mrs. Wrigley, she was a collector of cacti. So you'll see in that garden cacti from all around the world. What you'll also see in that garden, though, which is what makes it really special, is that you'll see all of the endemic and native plants of Catalina Island, and you'll also see a collection of plants from the other Channel Islands. And among those, you'll see the Catalina Island mahogany, which is one of the rarest trees in the world, with only 7 trees existing in the wild.
Wow.
You'll also see there the Catalina Island mahogany, the ironwood, which I'm sure you've heard of ironwood trees before. But
sure.
This subspecies is called a relic species, which used to have a wide distribution elsewhere and now is found only in, on Catalina Island. So ironwoods, St. Catherine's lace, Catalina live forever. There are 8 endemics on Catalina that are only found there. And it's one of the reasons, Lori, that we put so much effort into removing non-native plants from the island, because most non-native plants, as a survival strategy, they do things that actually kill off natives. For example, broom. There is a broom, which is a beautiful yellow blooming plant that is from the Canary Islands, and it turns the hillsides yellow and looks beautiful. But it also changes the chemistry of the soil so that St. Catherine's lace, which would usually compete with it, can't grow there anymore. So in the interior, we put a lot of emphasis on removing the non-native that would change the habitat and either kill native plants or create a habitat that wouldn't be welcoming for the fox and other animals that that rely on the native habitat for their own survival.
Mm. We saw fruit trees that were planted. Is that to see what would do well as producers of fruit?
You know, the fruit trees were planted years and years ago in the very early days of the island, and those are not invasive. Some natives are not invasive, and so that means that they stay put.
Right.
And so overall, we've left the fruit trees in. The exception are fig trees, because what happens is with figs, birds eat them, and when birds fly around poop out the seeds, you end up having fig trees growing everywhere, and fig trees are highly invasive.
Yeah.
But some of the fruit trees that you saw, the pears and the apple trees, we leave alone because they're not a threat to the natives.
Do they produce fruit?
They do produce
fruit,
and residents of the island will go in and pick them.
Yeah.
But those used to be used for the various restaurants and the cooking facilities of the Wrigleys going way back.
Now, in May of 2007, there's a big fire on Catalina Island. How did that get started, and what were the consequences?
Well, the consequences will be felt for many years to come.
Mm.
Unfortunately, an unlicensed contractor had subcontracted even to another unlicensed person who were doing work at the radio station on the island, and were using something that was illegal to use. It was a torch, and when a cable broke loose, it flipped backwards and set the island on fire, and almost 5,000 acres burned. And it's done severe damage to the ecosystem. The ecosystem, you know, you'll hear people say, well, isn't fire good for ecosystems? Well, it is, but all ecosystems evolve in a way that prepares them for natural starting fires, like fires in nature. So, for example, a lightning strike is a natural fire. And there are very few natural fires that are started. And like other ecosystems, the Catalina system is really only set up to deal with a very few fires over, you know, the course of the century. But there have been hundreds of fires started by humans on Catalina in the last 100 years.
Yeah.
So we lost a lot of beautiful oaks that were part of very rare ecosystems that don't exist in many other places on the California coast. And because, unfortunately, of the non-native deer population, a lot of the plants actually died because they only have, after a fire, they have the energy in their root system to shoot up one set of, you know, healthy green shoots. And if a non-native that wouldn't normally be there comes along and eats those shoots off, the plant actually dies. So we did have to spend quite a lot of money and put up about 5 miles of fencing around some of the rarest plant populations to help them recover. So it's very complicated.
Yeah. Wow.
These things are all connected.
Yeah. Leslie Baer with Catalina Island Conservancy, thank you very much for all your information. Tell us your website.
Our website is www.catalinaconservancy.org.
Thank you so much for being with us here on Animals Today.
Thank you, Lori.
Animals Today is sponsored by Desert Paws. Desert Paws is a nonprofit organization whose main goal is to educate children and adults about important issues concerning animals and to promote the compassionate and respectful treatment of animals. Please visit desertpaws.org to learn more about what we're doing. And if you like the show and want to support it, please consider donating to Desert Paws. I thank you for joining us on Animals Today. This is Dr. Lori Kirshner encouraging you to nurture your love and compassion for the only other beings sharing our planet, the animals.